Saturday Night Theatre. The Tower of London, April 1641.
My Lord Strafford, all goes for us. Every corridor unguarded, your own door ajar. Balfour has played his part well.
He did not take the bribe, Captain. You will carry this ring and this letter to the king.
But the way is prepared.
Like the avenue to hell, too smoothly. Where are your men?
In the courtyard below. Lord Newport examines our orders prior to accepting our authority.
March your men out, man, and quickly. It is a trap. I will not leave here falsely. Pym must destroy me openly or not at all.
My lord, there is nothing but shame for me.
I command it. Obey me, sir.
I will take your letter to the king.
Pray God by its means he may at least save his own honor. You must hear what I have written. May it please your sacred majesty, I understand the minds of men are more and more incensed against me, notwithstanding your majesty has declared that in your princely opinion I am not guilty of treason. To call destruction on myself will find no easy consent from flesh and blood, but to set your majesty's conscience at liberty, I do most humbly beseech your majesty, in order to prevent such evils which may happen by your refusal, to pass this bill, though it condemn me.
My lord, no! Do not let them bring you to this.
I am not broken yet. Once I was the most powerful man in all England. While I live, Pym's cause is still in the balance.
While he leads them, you dare not put your trust in Parliament.
I must. It is the law.
But beyond them, and above the law, stands the king. Is that your plan?
He must use my plea more cunningly than that. He stands among traps and snares set all about him by John Pym and that coven of subversion and deceit, the Provident Company.
You knew. And yet you held your hand.
Ever since that bitter truce at Ripon 6 months ago. Had we but crushed those quiet traitors then.
We present Dennis Hawthorne as Thomas Wentworth, Earl of Strafford, and Noel Johnson as John Pym in Black Tom Tyrant by Brian Hales. Black Tom Tyrant.
Gentlemen, since there is no other business, I declare this meeting of the Provident Company concluded.
Motion put by the chairman, Lord Say.
And seconded, Mr. Pym.
Seconded by my Lord Warwick, this 27th day of October, in the year of our Lord, 1640.
But there are further matters to discuss, other than those of our company.
Do we have news from York?
The treaty has been signed at Ripon between the King's Council and the Scots.
The King has conceded to the power of the Covenant.
And in that strength lies our great opportunity.
Then they have Strafford and the King in a grasp of iron. There is nothing now we cannot do.
Their letters tell us so.
To meet the Scots' demands, the King must have money. Money that only a Parliament may grant. A Parliament that we shall control.
Do not forget the Parliament of May. Barely 3 weeks old when it was stamped out by Strafford's spite.
Neither he nor the King will dare to stop our mouths again. The King summons a Parliament now because he must. He knows the price that must be paid.
No Parliament, no money.
With Leslie's Scottish Redshanks cowling at his ears, he has no choice.
But before supply is granted,
he must right the wrongs that injure us. That is the rock on which we stand.
Cheap money, monopolies, the innovations to religion, he must answer to them all.
It will be your triumph, Mr. Pym.
We shall have all the votes we need. A majority in the Commons is certain.
Not so the House of Lords.
Not for a certainty, that's true.
What is the danger? We can carry the day there, surely.
There is one who can put us all into shadow. One fist that would mould all others to his will.
Black Tom Tyrant.
Stafford.
He has earned the name. The people know and fear it.
He is the king's most powerful servant.
And give him his due. Effective. He brought Ireland to heel as few men ever could.
Backed by a trained army of 8,000 Irish Catholics. Power indeed.
If that army had ever reached Scotland...
There would have been no truce. The Covenanters held in check. The king would have had no need of Parliament. Stafford, the king's right arm, would rule us just as he did Ireland, trampling men's liberties underfoot, crushing all dissent, putting men's consciences ever into charge.
But now, at York, he commands only a rabble.
And his hands are tied by the terms of armistice.
Even so, through him, and that other evil counsellor, the papist Archbishop Laud, the king may yet prevent our cause.
While he has Stafford and Laud to buttress him, he has the strength to resist and survive.
Then we must undermine these twin Samsons.
That is my intent.
And how will you bring them down?
Why? By the law of the land and the will of the people.
Our greatest strength is in the people's discontent.
Then let them demand justice. Cry out for it in the streets. The law we need is ancient, but to hand.
Impeachment.
Which sets Stafford safely in the Tower, a menace no longer.
That in itself is not enough. If such a man drives the ship of state upon the rocks of tyranny, where is our answer?
Why, then he pays the penalty. We cannot draw back.
Then the choice is plain. Our cause or his. I put it to you. Stafford must die.
Your Majesty, we concede too much. All we have gained from the Scots is defeat.
Conciliation is but a means to buy time.
Then let us use it wisely. Let us make a stand and no more promises.
Do not scorn them, Stafford. Those same promises divide my enemies.
With the army from Ireland, we could yet destroy the Scots and persuade all men to your cause. It is still not too late to act.
A truce has been signed. We are bound to its terms.
So, the Covenanter commissioners now ride in triumph to London.
They go there to negotiate a proper peace.
With the new Parliament, sire, not their rightful king.
I shall be there also.
Your loyal Scot diplomat, Hamilton, suggests I do not travel to London with you.
Hamilton has great respect for you, Stafford. He has only your best interests at heart.
Not so. He reckons me too dangerous as a peacemaker.
Just as does John Pym.
Pym. The people's friend. The noble ox of Parliament. He manipulates them just as he uses the Covenanter victory to create fear and anarchy. In his hands, liberty becomes licensed government by will of the mob.
Yet you shared a common purpose once.
All that is past. Now I admit only the authority of kingship as the keystone of government. Pym would remove that power entirely. But I stand in his path, and he knows it.
Such a challenge must force him to sharp action.
Now, there are limits to what he may do. He dare not curtail me by using the fury of the mob, nor by setting an assassin such as Felton at my back. He knows he must use the law if he is to persuade all men, and it is with that he will attempt to cast me down. But he cannot act alone.
Parliament may act, guided by his arguments.
His is not the only hand they will obey. When I speak, they will listen. They can be managed.
There is danger, even so.
I risk all to take all. Or is it your command that I swallow Hamilton's advice and flee shamefully?
It would save your life. For a certainty.
And how greatly would Pym and his sons of Zion rejoice at my retreat? No. I say let him challenge me. He may find instead that it is his life at stake, not mine.
in spite of all opposition? You intend to stay?
That is my wish. Whether as scapegoat or as king's champion, I serve. That is enough.
Then you will ride with me tomorrow to Whitehall.
All will be well, I know. My heart is high. There is no chill of fear in me. But my family here, close by to York, I know they would take delight in seeing me before I journey on to London.
Go to them. Gladly.
My apprehension is not for myself.
I know your courage. Let me put your mind at rest. You stand in my favor, that is absolute. By the word of a king, you shall not suffer in life or in fortune, whichever way events may turn from this day on. This ring is my pledge. Take it.
Sire, I accept it humbly.
Go to your estate at Woodhouse. Your health demands that you rest.
Thank you, sire. I shall follow you to Whitehall within the week.
But, Majesty...
Oh, my poor Archbishop, how terrible! To find yourself flat on your face.
Majesty, it was not the painting that fell, not myself.
A tragedy, even so. But how will Van Dyck ever repair that exquisite nose?
The painting was undamaged, Lady Carlyle. The heavy frame, being recessed, protected the canvas from harmful contact with the floor.
How merciful, an act of providence. Or even, perhaps, an omen.
I am not a superstitious man, but God grant it be no omen.
What a pity you were not present at its downfall. A revelation might have been apparent to you.
What could it have told me, my lady?
Why, it might have cried out, "No bishops," as it fell.
A matter for concern, not laughter, Lady Carlyle.
Your Majesty, do not scold us, Charles. We seek only to uplift my Lord Archbishop and his portrait.
The matter of the portrait is of little consequence, sire. There is news from Westminster. And the North.
Oh, Charles, must we talk politics?
Of necessity, my love. My Lord Archbishop, is the news of Stratford?
He will be at Lambeth by nightfall.
No sooner than desired, then. That man, he smells of horses, mud and leather, always. He's not at all amusing, even to this cut.
Then you will excuse us, my love.
Willingly. Come, Lucy.
Of course.
Oh, Strafford's arrival pleases me. But concerning Westminster,
our prospects of controlling Parliament grow weaker day by day. The Committee of Privileges find only for Pym's faction in the disputed seat.
Strafford should have been here sooner.
He travels as fast as his illness permits, Majesty. Gout and the stone cripple and waste him. Even so, for loyalty alone, he drives himself far beyond what other men find endurable.
But with Parliament already in session...
We need his strength, I know. He will be with us soon.
Pym awaits him. Just as eagerly as we do.
The danger is not Strafford's alone. I sense the precipice also. And should one fall, why, both will fall.
My lord, why do we halt? Is your sickness again upon you?
I am well enough, sir.
We can still turn back.
There is no turning back.
My lord?
I look behind us, Captain, to fix a treasure in my mind. The last boundaries of my estate, inherited, built upon, and husbanded by men I am proud to call loyal.
You will return to them in triumph, my lord.
First, we must take Pym by the dewlap and bring him to the dust. That is the only future that I know. Let us ride on, Captain. Quickly. Stop.
Is there still no news of Strafford?
It seems he remains in the north, my lord say.
Out of wisdom, Pym, or from cowardice?
Well, perhaps, as last summer, he is struck down by his sickness.
God forbid that he should slip from us by that means.
He will come to us yet at Westminster. His pride and his loyalty will make him.
It must be soon, while the mood of the house is with us, unfaltering.
Your speeches have seen to that, Pym. All our grievances truly put.
And a fine trap, neatly laid.
I claimed only the true right of Parliament, to declare the law where it is doubtful, and to provide for the execution of the law where it is clear.
A law that will fit Stafford like a noose.
My lord.
What is it?
Lady Carlyle, my lord.
I couldn't wait on ceremony, Robert. My news is too urgent.
Stafford.
He has arrived and dines with the Archbishop tonight.
At last.
You waste no time. Tomorrow he'll take his seat in the Lords.
It is then that we must act. And quickly.
Once started, it will be in my hands.
So, Stafford thinks to confront us boldly, putting himself above the will of the people.
If the commons are made to kneel to his power, they will not rise so easily again.
Then by noon tomorrow, he must be shown the truth is otherwise.
Thomas, you are in pain. Sit here. Be comfortable and at ease.
I am better now than I was, William, my friend.
The journey from Woodhouse wasn't easy, my Lord Archbishop.
Fortunately, I was well attended by this gentleman, Captain John Smith, my aide and messenger. You may trust him.
Such a quality is of value. You are welcome here, my son.
Thank you, Your Grace. Tell me how it is here in London. Why has Pym not moved against you thus far?
He does not sleep. Be certain of that. The ox plods on, but his plowshare bites deep, throwing up hatred and petitions of discontent, feeding imagined grievances, and spreading rumor and disquiet among the people.
Plots and protests, they are old and trusted weapons to Pym.
He employs them to guide opinion, just as a riverman uses the currents of a raging stream. In one day alone, we've had word of a Spanish garrison in the Tower of London, Whitehall under siege by Irish mercenaries, and French cavalry landed at Portsmouth. Do you wonder that the city shudders in its sleep?
But these are fantasies. They are food and drink to the people's rage against the king.
Do you hear them at my gates? Listen. Daily the apprentices bawl of senators outside this very place. They are totally without respect.
We saw them as we rode in. They did not know our faces.
Thank God for it. They are crude, violent men. They taunt me as the Pope of Lambeth. At times, Thomas, their fury leaves me trembling.
Pym puts you to the test, nothing more. He dare not touch you while I hold power.
I do not easily forget Buckingham, 12 years since. His physician torn to pieces in the street. The great night-long crow of triumph at Buckingham's death. It is the power of the beast given purpose.
Only when men learn to respect power do they prosper.
There is greater danger hidden within Pym's doctrine of the people. Its canker will subvert all authority, not the king's only, but state and church alike.
That is why he must not only be confounded, he must be crushed and all like him.
But how, Thomas? His strength among the people is so great.
It is founded on falsehoods. So, too, will be the case he mounts against me.
I am his target also.
He must take me first. Apart from all else, he hates me. Not for my cause, but as a man.
My lord, you want Parliament to impeach you?
If they disappoint me, why, I shall demand it. But Pym will spring my trap. Do not fear.
Now I see. You are the bait.
The mob are not my judges. They may spit Black Tom Tarrant at my back, but that is useless anger, not accusation. For Pym to succeed, he must act by impeachment.
A case correct in justice and in law.
Giving proof of my so-called treason, charge by charge. Nothing less will do to hold men's respect. And he can prove nothing.
But where is the trap in this that will catch John Pym?
Like him, I know the law. And I know Parliament. They will not tolerate misuse. If Pym should fail, the backlash of his ambition will draw a just and fitting punishment onto his own head.
Pym himself impeached in turn?
Yes.
But there has to be proof.
It is there to be discovered by honest inquiry. Pym stands on the razor's edge just as much as I. That is my challenge.
But, my lord, the risk you take is as wild as the toss of a coin.
Then let the game take its course. Time is all I need. Time to persuade and prepare those lords sympathetic to the king and his rightful cause.
Your face is troubled, Charles. Does this melody displease you? Something merrier, perhaps?
I think I would sooner have no music.
Oh, Charles. Do not let that adventurous Strafford depress your spirits.
He must succeed.
Oh, he will ride Parliament as he rides his horses into the ground.
You believe in him?
I despise the man.
He is a good and trusted servant.
But he is not another Buckingham. No man could be that.
Strafford has my trust, not my affection. I need his strength, nothing more.
And if he did not exist, where would you find a new champion?
I do not choose to think of it. Lord has lately become so aged and uncertain.
I'm here. I'm young. And I have the determination that my king should rule undisputed.
You are my wife, beloved above all else.
Then do not always treat me as a doll to be petted and pampered. I can be strong.
I know it. But for you, Lord and Strafford might have cracked me between them long ago.
You will prevail, Charles, both over them and Pym. For you are a king, God-given and precious to your people. No one will ever deny you that.
It is not enough. If I am to rule, Strafford must challenge Pym and win.
The commons hate their Black Tom tyrant. He will never persuade them otherwise.
But he can persuade the lords. He is there now. Pray God that they will listen to him with an open mind.
There are forces here at work, my lords, that must bear examination for the good both of the Commonwealth and the king.
Remain here, Smith, while I take my place.
Yes, my lord.
Once I have spoken, you will know how it goes.
I will ride then at once to Whitehall and to the palace of Lambeth.
My old man, you will bear a good report.
My lord, listen.
I set before you, humbly, and with the knowledge that justice will be done, this document of accusation.
It is Pym. He has forestalled us.
Freely and fully voted on by your brothers, those gentlemen at the House of Commons, names one man as the evil centre of these troubled times. The Earl of Strafford, Lord President of the North, Lord Deputy of Ireland, the King's Chief Minister and most evil counsellor.
He has moved against me like the wind.
Yes, I should have seen you, my lord. They are waiting at you to go.
I say, his purposes are set implacably against the good of the people. In their name, I demand that such a monstrous arrogance be brought fully to account.
My lord, it is the will of the house that you withdraw.
This is my rightful place, Maxwell. You cannot deny me.
The charge of impeachment has already been laid against you by the House of Commons, my lord. It is now sub judice, and all your rights here are curtailed. You know yourself how the law stands.
My lord, it can't be true. How else can you speak your case? Only at my trial. Not here and not before. Pym has won this trick.
Not so. You must speak in the streets if need be.
That cannot be, Captain. Maxwell commands me as Black Rod, usher to this house, and he has something yet to say. Finish it, man.
It is my duty not only to sequester you, my lord, but to set you in honorable custody.
No, I'll prevent it. No thoughts, Captain.
after you, my lord, but to set you in honorable custody.
No, I'll prevent it.
No thoughts, Captain.
I must submit to law.
Where do you take me, Maxwell?
For this day only, to the confines of my own house, my lord. But thereafter, you will be a prisoner of Parliament, kept at their pleasure in the Tower.
It was a triumph, Mr. Pym. Was it not so, sir?
Perfect, both in timing and in strategy.
Strafford in our palm at last. Did you see his face when Blackrod demanded that he withdraw?
There was a fury in his eyes, not easily forgotten.
Frustrated both by action and by law, who can blame him?
Be sure he is less arrogant now.
But not yet defeated, my lord, say.
You are a lawyer, Mr. Glynn. Do you doubt what we have against him?
My lord, what we do not have, we will shortly find.
That will take time.
With Strafford safely sequestered, time is on our side, but we must use it skillfully.
Do not let us forgo our other grievances.
Religion foremost of all. Then I move Archbishop Laud to be the next impeachment.
Not yet, my lord Warwick.
Hmm?
Let godly men such as Bishops Williams, Prynne, and Burton first be freed.
The city will rejoice at that. Each one is a martyr to Lord's oppression.
And what of Secretary Windibank? Are we to let that self-enriched parasite go only half-examined after all?
No, my lord. Not him nor Lord Keeper Finch. But with Stafford's power curtailed, we have a tool to hand that will serve us equal to impeachment. Fear.
Now they are rid of their protector, what will they do?
They will flee, my lord, like rats from a sinking ship. And that vessel will founder all the more quickly for their leaving of it.
My Lord Strafford.
What's this, Balfour? I made no request for your company.
You have a visitor bringing you books.
John Smith, my lord, your servant, bearing news of your friends.
Small comfort in that. Be quick about your business, sir. We do not measure time lightly here in the Tower.
A dour man, my lord.
Sir William Balfour is a man who sees his keepership as a sober matter. He is, even so, a gentleman.
He is too closely related to the Covenanters for my peace of mind.
Perhaps it's just as well that you are a soldier no longer, Captain.
To play the courtier seemed more fitting. To avoid suspicion.
A wise step. You are too loyal for comfort with a sword in your hand.
Should the chance come, my lord, the hand and the sword will be ready.
This is neither the time nor the place. Tell me your news, briefly.
None of it is good, my lord.
I do not expect sweet hallelujahs, man. I ask for information. Speak.
Bishop Williams is released. A great rabble acclaimed him as he rode through the city to the Lords to resume his seat there.
He has a mind to be the new architect of the church, given the chance.
Well, Archbishop Laud sees less danger in him than in the zealots Prynne and Burton.
Are they released also?
Greater crowds than followed Bishop Williams welcomed them with bouquets of rosemary through the city streets.
Rosemary for remembrance.
Grey-green for liberty, so-called. But a badge of hatred against all Catholic souls.
Laud was right. It is a black omen for the days to come.
There is worse. Secretary Windibank, under threat of impeachment, has fled to France.
But his crimes are petty, like the man.
His nephew Reed has deserted with him, protesting that they had only ever obeyed their master's orders.
They blame the king? I would whip such servants through the streets.
The king's servants are pressed from every side, my lord. Even privy councillors are now to be examined for what they know.
But that openly denies the executive privilege of government.
When Parliament asked, the king gave way, my lord.
Then who will dare ever to speak again in council, for fear of being later called to their disadvantage?
The king had little choice. To deny Parliament the right of search would admit cause for deceit. And you were their target.
Why does Pym need such evidence against me? What trick does he next intend?
That is not yet clear. But if there is any to be found, he now has the means to root it out.
There is none. That should have been the only answer.
Parliament is no longer held off so easily, my lord. They are in full cry.
So, the wild hunt is on at last.
That's the fear that haunts many minds, not least my Lord Archbishop.
Pym has hoodwinked us all. While we wait boldly for the bludgeon or the knife, he has infected men's souls with a fear that has them cringing at shadows. By this, he will strip the king of all ministers, all loyalties, all friends, tearing his power to the bone.
And yet he has not so much as raised a sword in anger.
God forbid he ever has the chance. But it is not yet too late for the Archbishop to run to ground. Seek him out quickly. Get him to Ireland, to my lodge near Dublin. He, above all men, must be made safe.
Evensong in my own chapel. It saddens me, Maxwell, that it may be the last for some time.
It is a concession granted only to a few.
Greatly appreciated.
My masters, the lords, are not spiteful men.
Being with God and my small household of friends for this one brief moment brings peace.
Cling to that moment, then. It will give you strength.
As did the psalm for the day. Did you mark it?
It had less meaning for me than for your own situation.
Blessed is the man whom thou chastenest, O Lord, that thou may give him patience in time of adversity, until the pit be digged up for the ungodly.
They gather them together against the soul of the righteous, and condemn the innocent blood.
But the Lord is my refuge.
We must make our journey soon.
Not before sunset, I beg you.
It's already almost dark.
Another mercy for an old man. I would avoid the gazing of the people and what they might call out against me.
The barge that will take us to the tower is moored and waiting.
A few last farewells only remain. I'll be with you in a moment.
Your Grace, I can grant no more concessions. You must come now.
My Lord Archbishop.
My son, I know your face.
John Smith, Your Grace.
Thomas sent you.
He did, but...
You were too late.
Why is Blackrod here? Have they moved already to impeach
you? The accusations were made this very afternoon, my son. I am not afraid.
Do not submit to them. They have no rights.
I perform the command of Parliament, sir. Stand aside.
Obey him, my son. Who knows? I may meet old friends at my new lodgings in the tower.
Give me your blessing, Your Grace. And... God go with you.
I grant it, and not for you only. In nomine Patris.
No more, Your Grace. Yes. We must go now.
Amen.
What can I do?
Watch my going, and pray for me, my son. Then tell those who should be told.
My lord, farewell.
Come, Your Grace. The barge is waiting.
Our way is barred. They will not let me pass.
You are in my charge and safe. Do not be afraid.
But see how they lie in wait, exulting at my downfall. Wolves, eager to savage the Lamb of God.
Lord, in his mercy, save your grace.
Amen. Amen to that.
You see, my Lord Archbishop, there is no violence in wait for you here.
God save your grace. God rest you, Christ.
Have I so many gentle friends? They kneel before you all along your path.
Your blessing, my lord.
That they should kneel for me. Step aboard the barge, Your Grace. Then grant them the blessing that they ask.
Thank you, my son.
Answer them, Your Grace.
The floods have risen, O Lord. The floods have lifted
no
up their voice.
No ceremony, my lord. Now step aboard. Give us all your blessing. And quickly. The boatmen wait, and we must depart.
Bless us, your children, my lord.
Your Grace.
In nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti. Amen.
Enough! Oarsmen, pull away! Pull, I say, for King's Reach and the tower!
Alpha informed me of Lord's arrest with true Calvinist delight.
It was a cruel trick played on an old man. A week left of Christmas. Surely Pym could have stayed his hand for 7 days.
Not if the move were forced upon him.
But Pym controls his faction totally.
He uses them. I tell you, there has never been a parliament such as this. And if left to grow, it will gnaw at the roots of kingship and government until the whole tree falls. An overturning based on protest and discontent. Its true meaning hidden beneath a turmoil of religion.
Pym attacks the king's powers at every vital issue.
More than that, he seeks to deny his divine prerogative. Pym would make the throne answerable to Parliament alone.
He must dispose of you and all other loyal gentlemen first, my lord.
That will not be easy. And every day here gives me more confidence.
You count 6 weeks in the Tower as a mark of triumph?
Because the articles of impeachment against me are still without form or substance and incomplete.
The committee is still at work.
They do not seek for evidence. They grope.
Pym is cunning enough to fabricate what he cannot find.
Why then let him? I relish the chance of tearing his coat of falsehoods into tatters. There is nothing he can set against me. Nothing.
My lords, we have Strafford and Lord in the Tower. Lord Keeper Finch is impeached and fled into exile. The Earl of Essex now commands the military and can be trusted by us.
But the royal power is not diminished, it survives.
Lords such as Hertford, Bedford and Bristol lean ever more closely to the king.
The junto of papist officers about the queen increases daily. And there is too much talk of overturning.
The Scots and Presbyterians.
Their clumsy extremism must be kept in check. They dismay moderate men.
Their demands are not easily satisfied.
While they threaten to uproot the established church, our cause must suffer in the middle ground, and the king grows stronger.
He already seeks a shrewd Protestant marriage with the House of Orange.
That would produce not only popular goodwill, but gold that could free him from Parliament's purse strings.
We need a bold diversion, an attack.
We have one to hand. Strafford.
Can we proceed against him?
Shortly. And for his trial, we now have a further tool. Evidence that, if placed before Strafford's peers at the correct moment, will ensure his downfall utterly.
New evidence? What is it, man? Show us.
Read this. The passage I have marked.
An army in Ireland you may employ here to reduce this kingdom. Whose words are these?
My Lord Strafford's.
This kingdom? England? Why then his treachery is proved. He is a dead man.
Wait. Mr. Pym, this is written in your hand. How is this legal evidence? What is its value?
Those words were spoken at the council meeting held on the 5th of May, 1640. The notes, minuted by Secretary Vain, were set aside amongst his personal papers, and there discovered by his son, who brought them thoughtfully to me.
Young Vain. However true the item, his procuring of it must be suspect. He is a known fanatic, extravagant in all his beliefs.
Rifling his father's papers hardly sounds a godly action, whatever its purpose.
Its intent was innocent, but I agree with what you say, my lords.
But then, if it is suspect, how can it help us?
First, think how men will see those evil words.
As open treason.
But Strafford had good reason to bring his Irishmen to fight the Scots invaders. That cannot be construed as treason in a time of war.
The note says this kingdom, my lord.
Indeed it does.
But which? Scotland or England?
Either is implied. But I say only one was intended. My lords, it is a known fact that Strafford only narrowly failed to negotiate Spanish troops to aid the king. Where next would he turn but to the army he had raised and trained so well himself in Ireland?
If we allow that, then we have him indeed. An offer to the king to make war on his own subjects.
With the council itself as witness.
They will need reminding.
Oh, we have it here in black and white.
In Mr. Pym's hand only. Why is this?
From consideration of the young man's feelings, my lord. loyalty to his father's trust set against public duty.
An embarrassing choice, hardly to be admitted publicly.
And by making this copy, the source of betrayal is less easily tracked down.
A generous action, Mr. Pym. And shrewd.
But unacceptable in law. How can such a tarnished truth be used?
By Secretary Vane himself.
Then he knows?
Not yet. But when the time comes, he will not prove difficult to persuade.
He hates Strafford.
Even so, he is bound by the honor of his task, in public at least.
Not so. He is obliged to speak, if we so command.
By what means?
Do you not recall, my lords, that request from Parliament, granted by the King, that all privy councillors be answerable on oath as to whatever has passed in council?
Mr. Pym, I salute your mind. You knew what to look for even then.
So, the source is honorable and the fact is found.
And will be used at the right and proper moment once Strafford's trial begins. No later than January's end, pray God.
But until then,
we must work to keep Parliament all of one mind, away from the curled lock of Antichrist and bishops.
Bishop Williams, we welcome you.
God's blessing upon both your majesties.
Your petition states that you wish to express concern about the priest John Goodman.
A priest of Rome recently tried under that law of Great Elizabeth. It makes it a felony for such a priest to enter this realm.
Tried and found guilty.
But reprieved by the power of mercy that the king my husband holds, Bishop Williams.
Mercy is a just prerogative of kings. It must be used wisely.
You are known as a moderate man, Bishop. Why do you object to mercy?
This priest has broken an ancient and respected law. He must pay.
An ancient and despicable law has been used against him, Bishop Williams. There is a difference.
If a law is at hand and cherished by tradition, it must in the course of time find use. And should one law be denied, then so must all.
Mercy does not deny the law, Bishop. It tempers the law with compassion.
Also again, your grace, do you deny God's charity?
The city cries out aloud. I only bring its voice as plaintive to your ears.
A voice that demands the overturning of the church. A voice of passion, not of peace. Let that voice be still.
Your Majesty, Parliament asks only this, that the law might take its course unhindered.
They want a priest of Rome to be hanged, nothing more. Oh, Charles, ceci n'est que de la vengeance. Je ne peux pas permettre cela.
If this be so, Bishop Williams, let Parliament consider the consequences. If this priest be hanged in England, why, we must justly fear reprisals against Englishmen abroad in Catholic dominions. And in taking that advice to Parliament, take this also.
Your Majesty,
it is a petition from Father Goodman himself. It is couched in simple terms.
He begs that his execution still be carried out. He would rather die on the gallows than cause ill feeling between the king and his people.
It is a rare victim that can offer greater mercy than his oppressors, Bishop Williams. I command you, take his petition to the lords and let them put the matter to their own conscience.
How then did the lords accept Goodman's plea?
My lord, they read it and were deeply moved. The wanton vengeance of the Puritan extremists revolted them.
They condemned it.
They have set aside Goodman's death indefinitely.
Then they are prepared to make a stand against the commons.
The king's act of mercy was resolute and just, urged firmly by the queen.
Her strength begins to show. Pray God he uses it.
It is she who continues the negotiations which you began for aid from Spain and Holland.
And the marriage bargain with the House of Orange.
The match is all but secure, though William is but 12 to Mary's 9 sweet years.
There may be children yet, but it is a solid Protestant foundation.
But will it affect Pym's hold on Parliament and the people?
Who can yet tell? But his opposition to the crown stands in danger from its own success.
Without a common enemy, his factions grow as undisciplined as the rabble in the streets. That is why he needs me, in all honesty, to unite them in a common hatred.
All is prepared at last, then, Mr. Glynn.
9 general accusations of subverting the laws, 28 individual cases of tyranny and injustice, most concerning his rule in Ireland.
And the army question, Article 23.
That is our trump, awaiting only your signal to be played.
Strafford is to be accused before the Lords tomorrow.
He will be sure to ask for time to read and answer to the charges.
Do not oppose that request too strongly. And in the event, give way.
But he will use it to muster up his best defense.
We too need the time to remind the people of his ego by the printed word.
Publish the charges?
Why shouldn't all men know his crimes?
That is a broadsheet that people will enjoy.
Those against him hate him. Even those for him fear his power.
He will be forced to justify himself before all England when trial commences. And he will fare no better than would Judas.
Judas made a different ending.
Strafford will be just as much alone.
Mr. Pym.
My lord, sir.
It is tomorrow that Strafford is accused.
It is, my lord.
We are well prepared, my lord.
But you, Mr. Pym, you look uncertain.
We are not dealing with a fool. However strong our case, it is in the balance. And Littleton, the new Lord Keeper presiding at the trial, is loyal both to the King and to Strafford.
We dare not fail now.
I do not intend that we should fail. I merely suggest alternatives, just as deadly.
But there is no further evidence more damning than that we have already.
And if what we have is not enough?
Why then? We must turn yet again to the laws of England. In due course. For now, let Strafford's trial go forward, just as we have planned.
You asked for me, my lord. Can you not sleep?
Work is necessary, Balfour. Sleep is not.
I do not expect to be summoned at this hour to be lectured on the virtues of loyalist endeavor.
And I do not count time when it involves the preservation of my life.
The king's presence at your hearing gives you a needless arrogance, my lord.
Are you dismayed by it, as well Warwick can say?
It was unwarranted.
But effective, for it cheered loyal souls.
I am not here to argue. What service do you want?
I have certain rights, Balfour, that even you cannot deny.
Name them.
Witnesses. My secretary from Ireland, Radcliffe and Wandesford, I need their testimony at my trial.
Warrant away, then. Radcliffe is in custody in Dublin, awaiting his own impeachment.
And so conveniently silenced.
Wandesford also, but more permanently.
What of him?
He is dead, my lord, of a sudden sickness. They say the Irish burden you bequeathed him was too great for him to bear.
I left Ireland in a comfortable and settled state.
While you ruled, perhaps. Now they unite, Catholic and Setter alike, in repudiation of the obedience you forced upon them.
They will be brought to heel again once I am free.
Do not hope too soon, my lord. The tide runs against you.
What do you know that I do not?
Pym moves ever more cunningly against you, man. At his hint, Bishop Williams has persuaded all other bishops that a cause as sanguineous such as yours should not involve them.
But their vote in the Lords could make the difference between life and death.
They have waived the right both to speak and to vote. They are useless to you.
And so they escape the anger of the commons and the people.
Perhaps they know and fear the mood of the mob more closely than you do.
I am on trial before my peers, not a rabble. I will be heard.
Under a hostile arbiter such as Lord Arundel.
Lord Keeper Littleton is president of the court.
No longer. Illness keeps him from Westminster. Arundel, as Earl Marshal, will find little in your favor.
I still have truth and honesty on my side that neither Pym nor fate can remove.
Your truth and honesty will not serve to upend the Puritan power now. It is too late. In 3 months, Pym has taken the king's government apart. like a watch that needs repair.
And when he comes to put it together once again, does he think it will go any the more smoothly?
There is no going back now.
You are wrong. Pym has attempted much, claimed even more, but his coming work has barely begun.
Do you count impeachment of ministers and judges, abolition of the prerogative courts, and the destruction of royal excesses nothing?
None of it is irreparable. Pym's subversion can still be held in check and reversed. It has to be so.
You are not easily defeated, Strafford.
I have a dream. It will not be denied.
Man, it saddens me that you burn yourself out serving a king who is not fit to rule alone. You are sick. You are exhausted. What glory is there in such thankless ambition?
I have known real power. I have no need of false glory. Halt, blind, or lame, I will be found true to my most gracious master.
Then pray God that your master be found worthy equally.
And to that, amen.
There has never been such a trial as this, Mr. Pym. Look at the public benches. There is not a seat spare.
Nor in the galleries.
The gentry there show little pleasure at the din and stench beneath them.
It is there we shall find our greatest sympathy, Mr. Glynn, among the common people.
They pay it just now. See, he arrives.
How the man has changed.
He's a stooping graybeard, not a tyrant.
Look at him, the poor soul, God help him.
We will win sympathy by his condition.
Let his black record speak for itself. It will take more than pity to redeem his treason once we have done with him.
Silence! Let the case begin.
From the moment my Lord Strafford took the stand, Your Grace, the Commons prosecution faltered. In a week, he's taken a clear advantage over Pym.
Was Thomas well, my son?
He seemed an old man. A warmly wrapped, weary of face, but with clear wits and a dignity that drew all men's eyes upon him.
No dread tyrant, then.
Nor the evil bogeyman that Pym would have the mobs believe.
Did the accusations against him ring true?
Pym himself and John Glynn led the attack. Both urged the lords to treat the indictment as a whole, as an accumulation of acts which together amounted to treason. Few were convinced.
And Thomas's reply?
Clear and masterly. No mysteries, no rhetoric, only facts. The discrepancies he revealed, the doubts he made obvious.
But this Article 23, the threat of using the Irish army.
Well, Secretary Vane was called as witness to Strafford's words.
An army to reduce this kingdom. It can only mean Scotland.
Vane could not be shaken from the phrase, but offered no interpretation as to its meaning.
Words alone are not sufficient.
And yet you frown, Your Grace.
Did Thomas stand firm? Did he call honest witnesses?
Hamilton, Cottington, and the Bishop of London all deny that my lord had advised in any way the use of the Irish army against England.
Pym cannot be much content with that.
Indeed. He quickly left aside Article 23 and took instead charges of tyranny against the Scots. My lord covered them with doubt easily.
Still, it disturbs me. Pym is not one to be put aside so easily.
His prosecution struggles. His witnesses are dubious, his evidence weak and thus distrusted. And few charges remain that cannot be blown away just as easily.
Except Article 23. Tell Thomas to be ever alert, Captain. Pym will return to that sour bone, I am sure of it.
Mr. Pym, look at Strafford. He smiles like a cat toying with a mouse.
Where is the triumph that you promised us?
In 2 weeks, Strafford has disposed of virtually all the specific charges. We do not merely lose
ground we verge upon the precipice.
My lords, our trust rests on Article 23.
That alone gives definite grounds for treason.
It is not yet proven, Mr. Glynn. Vain's evidence is hearsay only. It has no strength in law.
Then we must buttress his words with fact.
A copy of Vain's notes?
At second remove and in your own hand, Pym. Who will believe that?
It will serve our turn.
Pray God that it does. Use it wisely.
That is our purpose. Mr. Glynn, you will lead.
Willingly, Mr. Pym.
Silence! Mr. Glynn, proceed.
My lords, I wish to inform you that I have new evidence to submit regarding Article 23.
My Lord Earl Marshal, you have an objection, my Lord Strafford? No objection, but a request for like permission to call new witnesses, not only in respect of Article 23, but of others, if necessary.
They must not allow him.
They may, Mr. Glynn. Their mood is against us.
Arundel has the power.
He can speak only for the House, not for himself, however faint.
My Lord, the concession is granted.
Mr. Pym, how can you now prevent his opening all other charges? He will take even greater advantage over you.
Strafford knows our strength and is afraid, my lord say.
We will bind him fast to the article in question, my lord.
I say take care. There is a trap here.
Mr. Glynn, will you continue or withdraw?
I repeat, my lord, I have new evidence to be called on Article 23.
My lord! I have additional evidence from at least four earlier charges. And he surely must be heard.
That's too much. I shall have to withdraw. My lord, I withdraw. I forego the new evidence.
We have tricked you, man. We're confounded.
Arundel, end it now.
The court stands adjourned, my lord.
We are in retreat. Look at Strafford. Look at the king there in his box. They're laughing, Mr. Pym. Laughing at our discomfiture. They know we have failed.
How could we know what devilment Pym would next devise? They were in utter disarray, my lord.
A bill of attainder set before the commons within the hour. His second line of attack already waiting to be used.
Surely Pym had no thought that the impeachment would end in defeat.
Nor in the form the defeat would take. But he was prepared and we were not.
But you have defeated him once.
I will not be given a second chance. Under impeachment, I must be judged guilty in terms of law. But the passing of attainder needs only a majority who merely think me guilty.
But surely that guilt must be proved.
Not under attainder. It is in the form of a parliamentary bill needing but a majority verdict to decree my guilt by law.
A law that can simply recommend a man to death.
Revenge requires only passion, not proof. They need only to restate the charges of impeachment. Any evidence will pass. The same evidence which they were forced to abandon at Westminster this very morning. A copy of a copy of a half-remembered phrase.
Are you allowed no defense?
Attainder is not a trial, man. I have no rights. There is but one question to be put. Whether my death is necessary for the good of the state. A simple vote will answer that.
But you still have the right of reply at Westminster to the Lords. The process of impeachment is as yet unfinished.
An open court of appeal. Then I may yet forestall the bill before it is laid before the Lords.
If only we could deal with the Commons as surely.
Oh, there's little hope of that. They would see me destroyed, whatever the cost. They will condemn me, even if it be only on the suspicion of intent.
This is not justice, but murder.
It is a political expedient, a means to an end. As just and merciful as a dagger in the back.
My lord, must you wait so patiently for your assassin?
Are you offering me the means to escape?
It is not impossible, my lord. A plan has been discussed by loyal friends.
That would be cowardice, if not suicide.
You are denied justice by due process of law.
Should the chance of freedom show itself, dare you refuse?
I thank you, Captain Smith. But first, let me state my case for freedom to my peers.
And if they deny you and subscribe to the Bill of Attainder?
Why then, act as you will. I will not refuse freedom then.
Mr. Glynn, I was too late. Has Stafford had his say?
He has spoken for close on 2 hours, my lord, and pauses only.
But why are there no voices raised against him from the crowd?
Caught up by his force of argument, my lord, he calls our theory of treason manufactured. Claims he has committed no treason under existing law and that he acted throughout for the common good.
And Pym does nothing to deny him?
The trial must take its proper course. This is Stafford's last court of appeal, and we are bound to hear him out.
Then he may yet escape our mark.
Your Lordship, I hope I am as clear before you as in good faith I am clear in my own poor judgment. I have ever admired the wisdom of our ancestors, who have so fixed the pillars of the monarchy that each of them keeps due measure and proportion with the other, and have so handsomely tied up the nerves and sinews of the state that the straining of one may bring damage and sorrow to the whole economy. The prerogative of the crown and the propriety of the subject have such mutual relations that this took protection from that, that foundation and nourishment from this. And as on the lute, if anything be too high or too low wound up, you have lost the harmony. So here, the excess of a prerogative is oppression, of a pretended liberty in the subject, disorder and anarchy. I claim to have been tried by both obsolete and newly invented laws and denied all common justice, while my acknowledged enemies are given every liberty to speak against me. What tyranny may follow upon this if in the face of such injustice you condemn me? These gentlemen tell me they speak in defense of the Commonwealth against my arbitrary laws. Yet I say I speak in defense of the Commonwealth against their arbitrary freedom. My lord, do we not live by laws? Are we to be punishable by them before they are made? I beseech you, let us beware of creating new treasons that condemn the subject on doubtful evidence. Let us beware of taking up ancient laws long and widely forgotten in order to process modern grievances. For we waken those sleeping lions to our own destruction. I tell you, it is my present misfortune, but in the future, yours, unless your lordship's wisdom guard against it. The shedding of my blood will but create the precedent for the marking of your own. I have now troubled your lordships a great deal longer than I should have done, were it not for the interest of those pledges that a saint in heaven left me. I would be loath, my lords. Something. Now, I can but submit myself freely
to your judgment. Whether that righteous judgment shall be life or death. Te Deum laudamus. Te Dominum confitemur. Amen.
He has saved himself, Glyn. What can Pym do now?
My lords, the vote for attainder is passed by the Commons. 204 in favour, 59 against.
We are almost there.
Tomorrow is Good Friday, Mr. Pym. How quickly can the Lords be brought to a decision?
It will take 2 weeks at least.
We must move more speedily than that.
We dare not. Already many Lords see our action as too vengeful.
2 weeks. By then, Lord Bedford may well increase the support for the King's new moderation.
You have heard of his plan?
Mr. Pym knows it better from first hand.
It is true. I have been approached. My Lord Bedford presents a bargain against Strafford's life. Lords, such as yourselves, harsh critics, will be offered positions of trust.
And what is offered to you, Mr. Pym?
I should be made Chancellor.
Against Strafford, set free?
Retired and exiled. For myself, I do not trust him, even if it were so.
Out of sight, he would be just as dangerous as at the King's right hand. I have rejected all connection with it.
On the grounds that Strafford must die?
On the more telling point of trust. The King frankly refuses to disband the Irish army, Strafford's own. He can have only one purpose for it in his mind.
Sooner or later, he intends to act from force.
The Lords must be told. It will surely sway their minds against Strafford.
They will hear it from the people. Already savage crowds gather on the waterfront and about the tower.
They are alive with rumour. Parliament is to be dissolved by force. The army is ripe for mutiny. Ever more popish plots.
It will soon be May Day. A tender time for angry men.
Discontent, rumour, riot. They must all be made to play their part.
And I have yet greater means to set the mobs ablaze, my lord.
Lucy, you're most welcome.
Lady Carlisle, what do you bring us so eagerly?
An army plot to occupy London and to seize the tower. Huh?
My lady, do not play with us. Is this fact or fancy?
Within days, the King will send 100 men to reinforce the Tower of London. They will be commanded by an officer fiercely loyal to Lord Strafford, a Captain John Smith. With the tower under their control, a signal will be given for all loyal officers of the Queen's Junto to act and forcibly pacify the people.
That is sedition.
Yet how smoothly it comes together.
It shows to all men the cunning of the King. He speaks moderation, but his true purpose is an act of brutal treachery.
We will prevent him. Balfour must be warned.
Such an act must be crushed without mercy.
But not hastily, my lord. First, we must let it happen.
What?
You cannot mean to ignore their conspiracy.
No, my lady. But now that we know their treachery, why, let us use it to our best advantage.
My Lord Strafford, you asked for me?
You are alone.
I've no need of a bodyguard.
The jailer.
You have a complaint against him?
None. But he is more than discreet. He is absent.
I gave him leave while we talked. Unless you would have him here as witness.
This matter is too personal for witnesses.
This door confines us both. Speak on.
You are a man of sober mind, Balfour. Fair and just.
I know my duty.
To King and to Commonwealth. Under Pym's rule, you stand to lose both.
Mr. Pym serves the people, however doubtful his practices.
To remove power from the King, he will be forced to remove that King himself. That cannot be acceptable to any man of honor.
I do not accept it.
And only I can prevent it.
You are not a free man, my lord. The Bill of Attainder...
It is a tool for my destruction, nothing more. It will not save the King.
There is the Lord's vote yet to come.
We both know how slyly that will be corrupted and contrived.
As you are trying to corrupt me, my lord.
I do not seek for myself, Balfour. We both have a king. My freedom can save him.
For that reason alone, I bargain for my life.
Few men can set a price on liberty.
£20,000. For that, you need do nothing. Only be absent, step aside, look away, be blind. For once, let duty sleep.
It would insult me to take your gold. What I do for a cause far beyond duty.
Balfour.
Good night, my lord.
The door barely swung to, not closed.
Captain Smith, you are here before the hour we named.
My lord, all goes for us. Every corridor unguarded, your own door ajar. Balfour has played his part well.
He did not take the bribe, Captain.
But the way is prepared.
Like the avenue to hell, too smoothly. Where are your men?
In the courtyard below. Lord Newport examines our orders prior to accepting our authority.
March your men out, man, and quickly. It is a trap.
But the plan...
It is betrayed.
Then why are we not prevented?
Because once I leave this chamber, your men will be massacred where they stand, and I will be butchered as would any common felon attempting to escape.
We will fight our way free.
Man, that is what Pym wants.
I will not surrender.
And I will not leave here falsely. Pym must destroy me openly or not at all.
My lord, there is nothing but shame for me.
Your courage is not in question, man. You must leave here boldly, drums beating, pennants flying. Newport will not prevent you while I remain.
It is not manly.
I command it. Obey me, sir.
My lord, what will you have me tell the king?
Give him this ring and the letter I shall write. Tell him to remember the priest Goodman and act accordingly. Perhaps by this means he may at least save his own honor. May it please your sacred majesty, I understand the minds of men are more and more incensed against me. Notwithstanding, your majesty has declared that, in your princely opinion, I am not guilty of treason, and that you are not satisfied in your conscience to pass the bill. This brings me to a very great strait. There is before me the ruin of my children and my family, hitherto untouched with any foul crime. There are before me the many ills which may befall your sacred person and the whole kingdom, should yourself and Parliament part less satisfied one with the other than is necessary for the preservation both of king and people. There are before me the things most valued, most feared by mortal men, life and death. To say, sir, that there has been no strife in me were to make me less man than God knows my infirmities make me. And to call a destruction upon myself and my young children will find no easy consent from flesh and blood. But to set your majesty's conscience at liberty, I do most humbly beseech your majesty, in order to prevent such evils which may happen by your refusal, to pass this bill.
I do most humbly beseech your majesty, in order to prevent such evils which may happen by your refusal to pass this bill. I am moved by the devotion of his words, but Strafford is not yet condemned.
Your Majesty, he is not afraid of death, should it come to him.
It will not come. I have told the lords that in no circumstances will I agree to pass the attainder against Strafford's life.
It was an inspired defiance, Charles. There is no higher law than kingly conscience.
The lords will respect that right.
But, Majesty, will they vote against the attainder, knowing of your determination?
They will follow the royal example, Captain Smith.
Ma'am, if the king's veto conquers all, there is no...
My word stands. despite Strafford's instrument of release.
A touching reminder of Father Goodman's gentle sacrifice.
My Lord Strafford looks to throw himself on the mercy of the lords in like fashion, to free the conscience of the king.
It is not necessary, sir. He is under our royal protection.
Your Majesty, forgive me.
The same protection is offered to you, Captain, but only briefly.
Reports concerning the army plots are now being placed before the Commons.
They have sent for various loyal officers. You are one they wish to question.
I am not afraid to face them.
There is too much at stake, Captain. Your presence here is dangerous and undesirable. Like the others, you must withdraw.
But, Your Majesty...
Sir, you will be commanded.
Do not see it as a retreat. You need to sit from view only for as long as it will take to set Lord Strafford free.
And on the word of a king, he shall be free.
I hear their baying, Balfour. They already know what you've come to tell me.
All London knows, my lord.
By how many did it go against me?
48 lords alone were present.
So few as that?
There were no bishops. 11 voices were set against the attainder.
Just 37 for my execution.
It was a proper vote.
With full liberty of conscience.
The lords were hard put to it even to enter the house. Great mobs choked all the streets about them, crying out rumors of mutiny, invasion, the army plot.
And now they parade here to salute Black Tom Tyrant.
Not all. Many are now congregating at Whitehall, petitioning the king.
Praying humbly that the king should sign my death warrant.
They ask only for justice.
They are wild animals, and their cause is no better. A wolf held by the ears.
They have faith. They have purpose. When the people speak with such a voice, they cannot be denied.
They must be denied, man. Balfour, false democracy is its own canker. It can grow only into a new tyranny set upon the people by their own blind folly, their so-called liberty of conscience.
You have rejected that conscience and its power. You had done better to have feared it.
I do not fear it, or the death it brings me. I fear only for the consequence. The terror of a nation thrusting itself ever deeper into a quicksand of bloody violence. Brother against brother, father, son. But most of all, I fear for the person of the king. For it is he who must pay, be sure of that.
Thank God they can come no closer. Savages, wild animals, be dark.
I am not afraid. Neither must you be, my love.
How can you be so unmoved? I'll be satisfied with nothing less than blood. Oh, pray God our children may be spared.
They want only one victim. Strafford.
Strafford, your strong right arm. As useless now as lord in the tower. The army plot has failed. My dearest friends and officers are forced to flee. We're in peril of our lives all because of Strafford.
He is my faithful servant.
He's a millstone. All men hate him. Oh, wash your hands of him and give us peace.
I gave my word.
He released you from it.
How can I, in all conscience, allow such a sacrifice?
Your judges gave you that answer. If Strafford is guilty, then he must die.
If he is guilty, we both know he is not.
The people and the law say otherwise. Listen to them.
My bishops have yet to give me their response.
You do not need them.
I will not act without them.
Your Majesty, Archbishop Usher and Bishop Jackson and William.
Your graces enter. Advise me firmly and without evasion. Usher.
Your Majesty, I have prayed and looked deep into my soul.
On this matter, there can be only one reply. In no circumstances should a king act against his conscience.
That is my opinion also.
Jackson, that offers no solution.
Majesty, you all understand your anguish. The truth is, you are two men with two consciences, both bitterly at odds.
It is true. I am torn apart. Go on, Bishop Williams.
As a private man, you may think and act one way, but as a king, ruler of your people, you are bound to different judgments.
A private conscience and a public mind.
That is the conflict within you. One or other of those consciences must give way.
My public conscience knows all too well the evils that may result should I transgress the will of my people.
That can only end in bloodshed.
And Strafford's life also.
But as a king, are you not more answerable to the god from whom your power came than the private man within you?
One man's life against the common good, is it as simple as that?
Majesty, Strafford himself knows this. His mind has already submitted itself to God's will.
Charles, set us free from this fear. End it now.
Give me the papers. I will sign.
There are other necessary papers. Majesty, will you accept them also?
Yes, I will sign them all. I tell you, gentlemen, the condition of my Lord Strafford is happier than my own. There. It is done. God, give me peace at last.
The king was wrong, Balfour. His conscience, whether man or king, is one and indivisible.
Small matter now. By noon, Strafford will be dead.
And the king must live with that betrayal. He has failed his sacred trust.
May God forgive him, then, as Strafford did.
Strafford sensed, as I did not, where this would end. Never came man to so lost a business. His own words less than a year ago.
He chose the master he would serve.
A king who knew not how to be or be made great. There was a time when Thomas and I shared and worked for a great vision. A commonwealth ruled by king and parliament together, balanced and at one. A dream now shattered.
By your own hand, in part.
I sought only to uplift the faith of the established church.
You sought to crush the faith of all true Protestants with your prayer book and your liturgy. You will never understand the conscience of the people, and that of the Scots, least of all.
There was room for debate, compromise even. But your covenanters chose violence and rebellion as their persuader.
And what was your way, my Lord Archbishop? The way of Rome, with Star Chamber as Inquisition and blind obedience as the price of God's grace. Do you wonder that men of my blood took up arms against your papist oppression?
It was never my purpose to reunite with Rome. All my actions were for the glory of God, our Stuart King, and the Church.
And in so doing, you have brought down all about you. How do you answer to that charge?
I am haunted by it. Perhaps it is God's will that for my pride, I too shall die.
That is yet to be resolved.
I do not doubt that Mr. Pym will see to it.
Today he has other business in hand.
To watch a forsworn comrade die on Tower Hill.
Pym will be there. It is a purpose he has long worked for.
He will grant me a brief moment of private farewell with Strafford.
No, your grace, he will not.
A last blessing only.
From this window, my Lord Archbishop, quickly.
Is he there? Turn, my son. Turn. Dear God, he sees me.
Give him your blessing.
In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen.
He salutes you and goes on like a general marching to victory.
God in his mercy grant him peace, even if men will not.
Well, Mr. Pym, are you satisfied?
Not yet, my lord.
Stafford is going to speak.
Let him. It will be his last.
To those who would listen, I have only this to say. I have served my king in all honor, with no intention other than the joint and individual prosperity of the king and his people. With that grace upon me, I bow to God's will and to my executioner. God save the king.
His head is off!
It is finished. Thank God there was only one.
And stone dead has no fellow. Gentlemen, let us now attend the arranged meeting of our company.
For this meeting of the Provident Company, no minutes will be taken. Instead, I call on Mr. Pym, our secretary, to advise us.
Gentlemen, the Earl of Strafford is dead. At the same time, the Self-Perpetuating Act has been given royal signature. Parliament cannot now be dissolved without its own consent. And by this, we have at last the power to restore the authentic rights of Magna Carta. Let us then consider what further business lies before us.
In Black Tom Tyrant by Brian Hales, the Earl of Strafford was played by Dennis Hawthorne and John Pym by Noel Johnson. Captain John Smith, Terry Molloy, Archbishop William Lord, William Fox, King Charles I, Michael Harbour, and Queen Henrietta Maria, Suvita Tuss. Arnold Peters played Lord Warwick, Gerald Cross, Lord Say, and Alan Devereux, Mr. Glynn. Sir John Balfour was played by John Sampson, Lady Carlisle, Patricia Gallimore, Bishop Williams, Charles Williams, Lord Maxwell, Black Rod, Stephen Hancock, and Lord Arundel, Jack Holloway. The play was produced and directed in our Birmingham studios by Roger Pine.